Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is Portrait of a Thriving Youth with special guest, Shireen L. Mala. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of season 2 on Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. This podcast is hosted by the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion, and my name is Holly Raffel, and I have the privilege of serving as the faculty director of the center. This month, the center is focusing on thriving youth. Today's podcast will focus on Gen Z, youth born between 1995 and 2010, which makes them ages 14 to 29 if you're trying to do some quick mental math, are known as Generation Z. Gen Z are society's best educated generation with endless possibilities to build successful futures. We also know that millions of teens and young adults are struggling to succeed in school, to secure good jobs, to achieve financial stability, and to manage anxiety and depression. Despite the challenges, today's youth remain steadfast in their bold dreams, aspirations, and work ethic. As adults, it's our job to support today's youth to achieve their dreams, whether we're parents, aunts or uncles, educators, social service providers, or even neighbors. That's why we couldn't be any more thrilled than to welcome Dr. Shireen L. Mala to today's episode. Dr. Shireen is the faculty affiliate of the University of Virginia's Youth Next and Center for Advanced Society of Teaching and Learning. She's interested in the intersection of applied science and social justice. As a scholar activist, her work draws heavily on rapid cycle evaluation, participatory approaches, design-based research, and the framework of QuantCrit to address three notable gaps. First, that gap that between what works in research and what works in practice. Second, the gap between valuing what we can measure and measuring what we can value. And finally, the racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic gaps in developmental and educational outcomes that are rooted in longstanding structural and systemic inequities. Dr. Shireen regularly engages in research practice partnerships intent on interrupting inequitable practices, policies, and research, as well as exploring communication and dissemination strategies that facilitate the use of evidence. She has a strong commitment to working with and for underrepresented and marginalized or systemically minoritized groups to leverage both quantitative and qualitative data in challenging dominant narratives. Welcome, and thank you for joining us, Dr. Shireen.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So as you can imagine, Shireen, our listeners really enjoy getting to know our guests beyond the bio. So we create some time at the beginning of the show called Beyond the Bio. It's creative, I know. This is a time where you can share with our listeners something about who you are beyond your bio. So maybe a little bit about what your work looks like on the daily, which part of your work you enjoy the most, or a little nugget about who you are as a person, whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
I'm a former middle school teacher and guidance counselor, and now work at the University of Virginia, as you just mentioned. And one of the things that I most enjoy is positioning myself at that fulcrum of the sort of teetering seesaw between research on one side and practice on the other side, so that we can sort of explore innovative and meaningful ways to translate research findings into actionable solutions and increase the probability that it actually directly improves the lives of young people. So a big part of that involves engaging with youth as partners in this work. And that's probably my favorite part of the job, is just to have opportunities to partner with them, to make this wonderful way of infusing joy, curiosity, and brilliance into our collaborative endeavors. My involvement in the project that we're going to be talking about today on the podcast, The Portrait of a Thriving Youth, largely stems from my own experiences growing up. I moved around and attended schools in different countries throughout my childhood and adolescence. And my first job as an adult, as I mentioned, was a teacher in an international school abroad. So I think from an early age, I started realizing how much the home and school environments vary across cultural contexts, particularly when it comes to teaching and caregiving styles, expectations, peer groups, social norms, and knowing how much that influenced my own development, it sort of ignited a bit of curiosity to delve deeper into understanding that world in my career.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shereen, for sharing that. I actually started my career as a ninth grade teacher, and I taught health at a high school. So, and I have a similar pathway to you, of where you kind of have an appreciation of doing the work in the high school and then seeing all of the things that are part of education that aren't part of the classroom. So for our listeners who are involved in the Ohio Adult Allies Initiative, YouthNext is likely a resource that they're familiar with, especially after your colleague, Dr. Jessica Forster, came to Ohio to speak at the Ohio Adult Allies Summit. So we know that summit occurred on the only snowstorm of the year, so many people missed out on Dr. Jessica's keynote about the transformative power of youth adult research partnerships. However, I was there and it was amazing. And in full disclosure for our listeners, Dr. Shereen and I served on the planning committee for the summit and do know each other from that event. For those in our listening audience who YouthNext is a new resource, can you please tell us a little bit more about that initiative?
Sure. YouthNext is a transdisciplinary research and innovation center. It's located within the School of Education and Human Development at the University of Virginia. The use of transdisciplinary as opposed to interdisciplinary is intentional because the latter typically does not involve non-academic stakeholders in the research process, whereas engaging non-academic stakeholders in the production of knowledge is really core to a lot of the work that YouthNext does as a transdisciplinary center. The faculty, staff, and students work in the center really aims to expand and apply the science of positive youth development to enhance the strengths of young people and prevent developmental risks such as physical and mental issues, substance abuse, school failure, violence. And broadly, there's a focus on three domains: educational systems, out-of-school time, and community engagement.
And for those of you who are listening at home, we will absolutely include a link to YouthNext in the show notes, so you don't have to furiously write that down or go to your phone and your memos to take care of that. So, Shereen, as we get to our topic of thriving youth, I wonder if a good starting place would be to help our audience understand YouthNext's definition of thriving.
So when we talk about thriving, we're thinking about it as a state of being that is deeply dependent on context and exists at both the individual and communal levels. So youth can thrive in one setting, but feel a sense of failure in another setting. Thriving emphasizes the strengths and assets, but structural inequities that inhibit individuals' opportunities to thrive. And even when life experiences are profoundly difficult, some youth thrive because they have support, positive relationships, and opportunities in place to help them manage that adversity. So thriving is not always visible to the onlooker. From our perspective, it's also subjective in nature and depends on the youth's own sense of joy, agency, and meaning in their lives.
So after hearing that definition, I'm curious, are there definitions in how young people tend to think about thriving versus how adults think about thriving?
Yes, I think that some of the differences are sort of the time frame that we consider thriving to take place in. So whether it's at a particular moment of time, a particular period of development versus long-term or over multiple periods of development. And so again, our emphasis in the portrait was to really look at the entire duration of adolescence rather than early adolescence, mid-adolescence, or late adolescence, and think about both the internal capacities and external resources that are needed to ensure thriving across that range of development.
So this seems like a good time to introduce the YouthNext Portrait of a Thriving Youth Initiative. For those of you who are listening, we're on the move, and I know many of you are. Please don't worry. We'll put a link to the full Portrait of a Thriving Youth report in the show notes along with other resources. So I'm curious, Dr. Shereen, what's the origin story of this initiative?
So speaking of YouthNext, the idea of the Portrait of Thriving Youth initially came out of some of the informal conversations our center director, Dr. Nancy Deutsch, was having with a number of colleagues reflecting the growing popularity of explicit frameworks like the profile of a graduate, which several states and school districts across the country have been using to define what success looks like or what the ideal state looks like when it comes to learning and development for children and youth. But also recognizing in those conversations the need to create something that depicts what youth need not only to graduate, but to thrive. meaning that full set of supports that young people would need in their families, in their relationships, in their communities, and in their schools. And when we think about thriving, as I just mentioned, it isn't just about whether youth are doing well, but rather whether they are equipped with those internal capacities and external resources that are required to thrive across multiple interconnected domains of development, including social, emotional, cognitive, and behavioral, all of which are deeply dependent on context. So in developing the portrait, we took a similar approach to that of the profile of a graduate. In our case, we had an initial design team that was co-chaired by Priscilla Little, a senior advisor at YouthNext, and Dr. Winston Waite, a senior program director at the Opportunity Institute. They brought together researchers, practitioners, and policymakers to engage in a really iterative and collaborative process, identifying key domains of adolescent development that reflect what we've learned from both contemporary developmental science as well as current and future societal needs. And once we had a draft that the team felt was ready to be vetted, that profile was shared at the 2022 YouthNext National Conference, where we conducted focus groups with researchers, educators, community leaders, and most importantly, youth from the YouthNext Youth Advisory Council to solicit feedback. This ensured that the perspectives and experiences of a number of key stakeholder groups were integrated into the profile as we continued to refine it. And that was particularly, again, important to involve the youth from the Youth Advisory Council, whose expertise as adolescents with lived experience is crucial to this work. And then since then, we've actually been taking the portrait on what we call roadshows to put it in front of additional stakeholder groups. For example, we recently worked with the 50 States After School Network, which brings together a wide range of partners from education, workforce, state government, community-based organizations, all with a collective goal of improving the quality of after school and summer learning programs. So our thinking is if we can start getting networks of networks to use the portrait, then we can really expand the reach of it. And by including a broad range of stakeholders from across the country who are representative of a broad swath of backgrounds and communities, we're able to sort of honor that critical component of the developmental process as we continue to sort of test drive the portrait.
It sounds like it's been an iterative work in progress type of project. So what are you most proud of about your involvement with the portrait?
I think that it has been that we entered into it not with ideas we knew we wanted to articulate, but rather on a learning journey and have honored that throughout the process. I've really been very intentional and methodical about creating space and opportunity for those that we hope will use the product to actually engage in the development of it, help us shape and refine it. Because ultimately that is how we define success of this, is if it gets into the hands of the people who use it most to make the impact that, you know, they are driven to make. And so I think I'm most proud that of the collaborative and iterative process that we have taken along the way.
Absolutely. It's a lot of listening and learning. And although that can take more time, in my experience, the juice is worth the squeeze.
For sure.
So in the portrait of a thriving youth, there are six domains of adolescent learning and development that are identified: health, cognition, identity, meaning and purpose, emotion, and social. All of our listeners were adolescents at one point, and we know from experience and maybe a little bit of hindsight that adolescence is a time of enormous growth of our bodies and brains. And there are so many factors that can be woven together to create a safety net of protective factors to help young people, or in our case, if we're reflecting what helped ourselves thrive in the face of adversity. I'm curious about how the design team landed on framing the portrait around these six key domains. What can you tell us about that process?
It really began with some of the behind-the-scenes work that UVA graduate students did. The design team wanted to be very careful not to inadvertently end up reinventing the wheel. So instead, we really wanted to build upon the 40 years of interdisciplinary research that has already been done on the science of adolescence. And so you'll find that we relied heavily on several existing frameworks and resources to guide the portrait development, including those developed by organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Academies of Science and Engineering, Science, Engineering, and Medicine, NIH, the Center for Developing Adolescent. So the portrait was ultimately designed The portrait was ultimately designed around those six domains to both encompass the breadth of adolescent learning and development, as well as highlight key tasks of the developmental period. And for example, we intentionally bundled physical and mental health together under that first domain of health to emphasize how the two are inextricably linked and of equal importance. And we recognize that even though all six domains are presented separately to draw more attention to those specific changes that are taking place within each of them, we're definitely cognizant of the fact that during adolescence, they're intersecting and overlapping at all times.
What I love about the framework is that it's designed to create a common language between adults and youth so that every young person can thrive during one's adolescence years and also successfully exit adolescence into adulthood. So how can adults use the portrait domains to ensure that they are providing young people with relationships and environments that meet their needs?
As you mentioned, having that common framework and shared language around what are the key indicators of those different domains helps when you are engaged in conversations around establishing shared goals. It helps when you are trying to determine what are indicators of impact to signal whether or not you have obtained the impact that was intended in the work that you have set out to do. So I think it allows for conversations across sectors in a more meaningful way, and it allows for adult caregivers in different contexts, so whether that be the home and school environment or across, again, those different sectors of education, counseling and after school time programs, for them to all have a way to be working towards the same collective goals and to be able to discuss and share ideas with that common language you spoke of.
So that really makes me wonder, how can youth then use the portrait domains to advocate for what they need to thrive in those different situations that they're in?
I engage in a lot of youth participatory action research work, both in our local schools and with partners across the country. And a few of the ways in the early stages that we've seen the youth use it is in helping to sort of frame more compelling arguments around advocating for their needs. So whether that be a student council that takes it to their school leaders to argue for changes in school policies, and using the framework to kind of identify what are the needs that aren't being met directly by the current policy or could be met better with a revised policy. We've seen it with youth taking it to school boards to discuss sort of additional resources that they believe that students at their school could benefit from, again, based on particular domains not being as well supported in the current state that they are in. And so that's one of the main ways we've seen, is it kind of gives them a resource they can reference, and again, that language they can use when articulating and advocating for their own needs.
Absolutely. And we know that when youth and adults work together to solve challenges, we really hit that sweet spot, right? And we're able to see the changes that we all want to make in our environment when we're looking at it from an inclusive lens.
Absolutely.
So in prepping for the podcast, as I read the portrait, I began thinking about all of the relationships I've had with adults and all of the spaces I engage with supportive adults in my life that contribute to supporting me and thriving in each of the domains. And in short, it was more than a single adult program, activity, or organization. So the portrait really helped me think of all of these people and all of these experiences as sort of puzzle pieces that came to influence who I am today. And so as adults, each one of us has the ability to influence and support young people in the multiple roles that we may play. So it could be family, it could be neighbor, it could be teacher, social service provider, mentor, faith leader, and the list goes on and on. So help me understand, what is the audience that the portrait of a thriving youth is intended for?
We consider the portrait a high-level call to action to provide any decision maker with common cross-sector language that can guide their decisions about resources, funding, and policies to promote or inhibit that promote or inhibit thriving. Additionally, it's really intended to help individuals or systems in education or youth serving organizations to understand and leverage the science behind the work that they're doing. We really wanted the portrait not only to reflect and be applicable to the diverse communities and youth from all backgrounds that we hope it will serve, but also be usable and relevant for the practitioners and policy makers across sectors. So we imagine, for example, adult practitioners, including educators and youth workers, can use the portrait to reflect on how their organizational and developmental practices are supporting or inhibiting thriving. We hope policymakers can use it to inform decisions that affect adolescents, maybe streamline policies or initiatives so that we can maximize our resource allocation and eliminate some redundancy. We hope both caregivers and youth can use it again to reduce language barriers and to advocate for those support services that research tells us can really promote thriving.
I love how you talk about how the design team imagined it being used, because that really leads me into the next question. In particular, I thought the youth self-assessment tool at the end is an insightful way to determine how well they are supporting thriving within the six domains. So when this tool is created, how did the design team envision that the tool would be used?
I think it goes back to a point you sort of made in how you framed your first question, which was that our idea is that no one individual or organization or sector is responsible for implementing this portrait of a thriving youth. Our belief is that no one program setting or system can or should be responsible for all these aspects of thriving, but by providing a tool that creates that shared language, we can all work together to ensure that students and young people in general are provided with everything they need to be able to navigate their challenges and reach their full potential. So that particular tool, the self-assessment, gives a way, it's sort of a pulse check to identify what are domains that you may already be well-equipped to kind of serve youth in, and others that may be struggling in some ways or could use additional changes or supports in order to ensure youth needs are being met. And that can be done by, again, any individual that's serving youth, the youth themselves, the organizations. And so our goal was to kind of give you something that could create a high level pulse check to assess how you're doing and to create and to sort of help you navigate or point to areas of potential improvement.
Absolutely. And so I'm just thinking about this from the lens, of course, Ohio's prevention community, and seeing them kind of read through the portrait, and then they have this tool at the end to help them not only do, as you said, a pulse check on their organization, but it also helps kind of with a knowledge check of what they just read, right? It really helps hit home some of those frameworks. So what recommendation would you have for someone who reads the tool or reads the report and then is interested in introducing the tool into their organization? So, you know, what feedback or what ideas would you have for someone to take this to their supervisor or take this to their executive director to actually, hey, let's sit down and use this tool?
Well, first of all, as you already mentioned, I was lucky enough to collaborate with you and the Ohio Adult Allies on this year's summit and had a chance to sort of witness firsthand a lot of the incredible and inspiring work you all do to facilitate and advance the quality and reach of youth-led programs in the state. And I just want to commend you on that. I think as when we first began talking about the portrait and trying to determine what it could be, there was a conversation around whether it would be a guidebook or a how-to, and we intentionally chose not to go in that direction. There are so many existing tools and frameworks out there that we believe can be used to implement various components of the portrait. So we kind of think the best way to use it is hand in hand with those existing frameworks and tools, depending on your needs. Our goal was really to bring together the key ideas across developmental frameworks and interdisciplinary literature, and then distill them down to common concepts so that we can create a portrait that serves as what we're considering a North Star. So that's sort of how I would suggest using it, as that North Star, as that sort of guiding resource that can allow you to identify what may be your immediate and long-term steps towards promoting thriving within your specific context. And then we've also started building out one-pagers to help adults that are planning to use the tool or use the resource to help them align it with their particular context. So we have one that's called, that's specifically for educators, for example, and has tips and takeaways that are relevant to them and links them to outside resources that can help facilitate their ability to bring sort of the portrait of thriving youth to their particular context.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you, you know, referenced our experience together in planning the Ohio Adult Allies Summit. And I'm just grateful for the time that you spent. I learned so much from the Youth Next team through that, along with, you know, hearing how our learning collaborative leaders, as well as Prevention Action Lines, our partners who lead Ohio's Youth Led Prevention Network, you know, can use something like the portrait to provide scaffolding for the strong youth-led culture that we already have here in Ohio. One of the challenges that we have with youth-led prevention is kind of communicating the value of youth-led to others, and seeing the portrait as a framework can help make those linkages, because we know that youth-led work can be done in schools, in the faith community, in community centers and other youth-serving organizations. So I really feel like you've hit that sweet spot of creating a resource where people can draw from it what they need from it, so to speak. Are you seeing that in your experience as you do the road shows, that people are seeing it in different ways, yet it's still unifying?
Still early on in the process. So I think the road shows are just kind of giving us a sense of how do we make this more widely applicable and expand its reach so that it can really be useful to all those who are serving youth in one way or another. I think the more interesting thing that has come to light, both from the roadshows and just from the early, from witnessing it being used early on, particularly in education systems, is how the portrait of a thriving youth helps to really establish that idea of something is better than nothing. It can be very overwhelming to think of all the things that need to be done in order to promote thriving among young people. And I think this breaks it down in a little bit more of a digestible way. And there's no expectation that you're going to be able to do everything or meet all of the indicators in all domains to the same level of quality that we would in an ideal world, but I think it helps to just sort of identify what could be some immediate pain points that can be addressed, or what can be some small changes that can put you on the right track and in the right direction towards those broader goals that a lot of these youth-serving organizations have. And so I think that's been one of the more helpful aspects of it, is it keeps the framework, or the framework was intentionally kept at sort of a high level to ensure that everyone can sort of get what they need from it, and also to make it feel less overwhelming and daunting of a task to kind of engage in this work and to engage youth in this work, again, by using that sort of common language across all sectors and across all stakeholders.
And thank you so much for that intentional thinking. And I wonder if sometimes thinking about it as high level and also overtly stating it's not one organization's job to do all of these things, that's a little liberating to organizations, right? That we are all needed, we all have a place. And so how can we work together instead of compete against one another to create spaces for youth that thrive?
Absolutely. I could not have said it better myself, that for sure is it. But I think the other piece is knowing how important that youth voice is in this process, and maybe addressing that barrier that sometimes one of the reasons that we haven't engaged youth in the past is not being able to know how to invite them into that conversation and how to make sure that we are equipping them with the knowledge and the skills to be able to engage in that conversation meaningfully. And so again, having this tool at this portrait of a thriving youth to be able to do that more is another way that we hope that this will benefit youth in the future.
Absolutely. And Shereen, you are speaking my love language right now, and I would love to keep this conversation going, but I just received the signal that we're getting close to the time where we need to land our plane. But before we do, I'd like to leave our listeners who want to ensure they are creating spaces for youth to thrive with some nuggets in order for them to know how to bring youth into the conversation. So after our listeners review the report, think about what it means to them, what's your recommendation for how to invite young people into becoming involved with looking at the portrait and what that means for creating thriving spaces in the community?
I think one thing that on a personal level I've noticed makes a big difference is as adults who have been grappling with this work for a while, taking accountability that it took us a little too long to figure out how important youth voice was in it. And so owning that when you initiate that conversation with youth and letting them know that a lot of the work that's been done to date has been very adult-centric and has had a notable absence of youth voice, perspective, and lived experience integrated into it. And from that, sort of taking accountability for that, showing transparency with that, to then say, we would like to do things differently, and beginning the conversation there and saying that in an effort to do things differently, here is one step in that direction, one attempt to deviate from what has not been working in the past, you know, however many decades of attempting to solve some of these real world problems around promoting youth thriving. And so I think that has been very helpful is beginning with a very honest and transparent conversation to invite you in, and then making sure that you are identifying the ways that you're going to empower youth in the process, rather than, I think what we tend to do is just share power, and there's a notable difference between sharing power and empowering youth. And again, I do believe that the portrait of a thriving youth is one way to move in to lean towards empowering youth. And so I think having them be able to leverage this tool and having them be able to review it alongside adults, ask clarifying questions, giving them opportunities to identify what they feel it's maybe missing or what may need to be changed or adapted to their particular context or experiences. So recognizing this is not a one-size-fits-all and it's intended to sort of be shape-shifted depending on who's using it and where. And so having them play a critical role in figuring out, well, how do we make this work for us and to our benefit? Because this is a working document, even to us, we consider it still unfinished, and we anticipate that it will continue to evolve as we learn from future stakeholders. And so making that pretty clear to youth is important as well.
Absolutely. And you had a statement in there that I'd like you to just expand upon a little bit here. And that's, there's a difference between sharing power with youth and empowering youth. Could you talk a little bit more about that for our listeners, please?
Sharing power, I think, is if we think about decision making, saying, you know, that youth will be provided with an opportunity to make 50% of the decisions. Adults will make 50, or when we make each decision, that they hold 50% of the weight to make those decisions, and adults do too. But when we think about everything that goes into making decisions or making change, and how we hope to make youth change agents to be able to impact their own influence and impact their own lived experiences and the settings in which they exist in, that takes more than just sharing power. That takes equipping them again with those internal capacities and external resources to be able to make decisions that can actually have the impact and influence that will create positive change. And so making sure that we're mindful of that and distinguishing between that when we are approaching them for collaborative work or when we are inviting them into conversations.
Thank you. I appreciated that clarification, because no one can empower anyone else. We're empowered together.
Right.
It's important to be intentional about what empowerment looks like. So thank you for really eloquently describing the difference between shared power and empowerment. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
A tradition that we have here on the Prioritizing Prevention podcast is to ask our guests a few rapid-fire questions to close out our conversation. And I think this is our folks' favorite part, because after these episodes go live, I'll have people email me and tell me their answers to it. And it always makes my day. And so these are meant to be a way for our listeners to connect with you as a person and to be pure fun. So there's no right or wrong answer. All you have to do is just answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. So are you game?
I'm game.
All right. So first, in spirit of our topic today, a question that highlights those vocational challenges that youth and actually all of us face. Would you rather follow your dream career path and acquire a lot of debt or find a job that pays the bills?
The first, that's a no-brainer for me.
Absolutely. And now a question aligned with interpersonal connection, because we know that that plays an important role in positive youth development. Would you rather spend a day without your phone but be around other people, or spend a day completely alone but have your phone?
Without my phone and around other people. It's a practice I'm trying to integrate more into my daily life.
Me too. And our final question, this is one we ask all of our guests. You are reaching into that bowl of M&Ms. Are you searching for a plain or a peanut?
Plain. I'm not a fan of peanut or peanut butter, which is an unpopular opinion, I'm sure.
So plain, do you have a particular color or just plain in general?
Maybe blue, just because it's my favorite. I'll just say it's just a favorite color in general.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Shireen, for sharing your time and expertise with us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you missed our last podcast, it was with Luke Russell, the Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Ohio, or NAMI. During our conversation, we discussed the importance of recognizing and responding to caregiver burnout. We also highlighted strategies that communities can utilize to prevent caregivers from experiencing burnout. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing it with others, posting about it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and keeps the conversation going. To catch all the latest from the center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, Facebook at OH Prevention COE. That's OH Prevention COE. Or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Production and was supported by Mackenzie Kay and Jen Morrell at the Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. Thank you for all your work behind the scenes to get positive prevention content out into the world.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services. For more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.